Welcome to the Self-Storage Lab, where we deconstruct how operators are adapting to today's technology-driven landscape and how it might impact your business. Today, we're examining the crucial shift from manual to automated access and security systems, driven by a competitive market and evolving consumer expectation. As younger, tech-savvy customers seek not just storage, but also enhanced convenience and security, operators are increasingly turning to automated solutions. These technologies not only streamline access and improve security, but also allow staff to focus on high-value interactions rather than their routine tasks. Joining us today are two dynamic guests from the industry. We have Eric Gardner, Director of Marketing at Five Star Storage, and Lynn Sykes, the Senior Vice President of Operations at Storage Asset Management. They'll share insights into how their companies are integrating sophisticated access and lock systems to meet the demands of the modern consumer and set new industry standards. So welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
We are honored.
Happy to be here.
Excited to have you guys.
So why don't we start with a little short introduction from both of you, just so the audience gets to know who you guys are, how'd you get into the industry, and you know what you're currently doing, and then we can get this started. Eric, do you want to go ahead and start?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Eric Gardner, Director of Marketing for Five Star Storage. We have 36 locations and operate mostly in the north, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Montana. I have been in the industry now for about 6 years. I was heavily involved in the digital marketing agency world. And when I went to go work with a certain agency, I had the privilege of Five Star Storage being one of my accounts. So I was their account manager and helped lead the strategic digital marketing charge on their behalf. Years later, I would leave that agency, and then our CEO, Ben Hendricks, reached out to me and told me how much he just absolutely had to have me back. I just putting words in his mouth there, but he asked me to come back. And so I've been with Five Star now for a little over a year, and super glad to be back in the industry and love everything about it.
Yeah, so I've been in storage for about 23 years. Prior to that, I was 23 years in the quick service restaurant business. I quickly realized that's for the younger folks. When I was about 40, I decided to leave and took a summer off. And somebody who I used to work with in quick service restaurants called me one day and said, "Hey, I hear you left." And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, what do you think about storage?" And I remember exactly what I said. "What the hell is that?" Because I didn't know.
That's awesome.
I didn't know. So after a couple more conversations, I got in, and what seems like a very quick 23 years later, I continue to wake up every day fascinated by this business, fascinated by what people store, how long they store it, and what they pay for it. I think what I love best about the industry is just how open and giving everyone is, regardless of who you work with or for. I've been with Storage Asset Management for about 8 years now. Prior to that, I was a director of operations for two other management companies. And, we are the largest third party management company in the United States with just shy of 600 locations. When I joined 8 years ago, we had 45. So wow. It's been a fun ride. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. So happy to be here today.
Glad both of our companies are on the same playing field.
Hey, look, you know, we all got to start somewhere, Eric. There's always room to grow, and you've got people to look up to, and somebody that's like a couple steps ahead of you that, you know, you can ask for feedback around.
Got to have aspirations.
Exactly. I'm going to jump off with the questions. I think it's just kind of starting with like a level setting here. I'd love to hear kind of like how, and Lynn, we'll start with you just to go there. I'm curious, just like, how do you define access control, and how has that definition changed in the like 2 decades plus that you've been in the industry?
Yeah. So when I first started, access was really, how do they get in and how do they get out? That was it. Right. Some had no access control, others had, but they were, relatively just rudimentary gate access systems in and out. And over the years, and that is driven not only by improved technology through everything in our lives, but also our business is much more sophisticated than it was 20 years ago. So just like any other business, as technology improves, you have to improve with it. In self-storage, I think that we have to do a better job collectively of embracing and implementing new technology as an industry. I think sometimes we still work off the, if it's not broke, let's not fix it mentality. And we definitely, operators as a whole, have to get on the bandwagon a lot quicker than what I think we are doing.
I don't know, Rodolfo, where do you want to start with the questions? I just kind of wanted to get a quick definition from Lynn there.
No, that's good. Let's dive straight into it. Curious kind of what type of access control systems you guys are currently using individually at each other's companies. What's available to the industry? Why don't we start high level and then we'll get a little bit deeper.
Obviously, as a third-party operator, it's a little different for us, right? In an ideal world, we'd like to quickly identify what you should have. But for the majority of properties that come to us are usually at acquisitions, right, and not developments. So they already come with an access control system in place. And so we tend to work with the owner-operator, right? However, over time and being able to be exposed to all those different types of gate access systems that come to us, I mean, when I say exposure, some have no gate access control. Some of them come to us with manual, can you believe it or not, manual gates that have to be open and closed twice a day, 7 days a week. It's a huge commitment to those that have what in today's world is state of the art. So we get exposed to a lot. However, what's great about that is we do get the exposure to those. So when folks ask us, what are your recommendations? We have narrowed it down to three or four. And those types of operators are ones that are, sophisticated for today's customer, right? So when you think about today's customer, contactless, easy response time, just a bunch of things that we think about, the security features, the scalability of that, easy use, remote access. There's so many things that we look at, but there are operators out there that offer all of that. And what's interesting, and I'm sure we'll get to it later in the conversation, is though, even though those might be more expensive to implement, to install, whether that's at the development piece or a retrofit afterwards, what's great about that is people are willing to pay for additional and better technology, so you can kind of recoup as well. So we do have three or four that we recommend.
I'm curious, Eric, to kind of throw it back to you. Like, I think it's like helpful, when I think about access control, a lot of times it's just the gate and maybe the doors, but I think there's a lot of things that kind of go through the entire journey of somebody coming into a building, out of a building, even the unit, et cetera. Like, could you walk us through like how somebody interacts with your access control systems from entry to exit?
Yeah, I think it's important to probably also understand, the vendor that we currently utilize, why we utilize them, and then that would help kind of form that answer. So we chose to partner with OpenTech several years ago with their CIA keypads for a lot of different reasons. We needed a vendor that would have a web-based program that was scalable and have all of our facilities and data under one roof. All of our facilities are owned and managed by Five Star Storage, but we do operate in what's called a hub and spoke format. So we will have a singular location with one to two property managers, and then they will serve potentially one to five different locations. So it was really important for us to be able to allow our property managers ease of access from one spot and even be able to do it, quote unquote, remotely from a web-based program. So it needed to update occupant accounts automatically, move-ins, move-outs, overlocking, readmitting, etc., without any sort of manual updates to be performed by a team member was a really big component of it. We also needed to have other great features such as alerts or for specific occupants. If we had a note on their account that we needed to be very aware that they were going to be on the premises for one reason or another, or any kind of codes that were being used, we needed to be able to be alerted to those. Notifications to team members when there were issues with the communications, reporting with trends on site activity, ability for team members to open gates remotely, like I said, even from their cell phone through like a mobile friendly browser based platform was a key component for us. And then additionally, having an app that allows for a hands-free access to keypads using Bluetooth beacon technology. So some of that in there obviously is part of what you asked, Mason, but I think it's really the key component here is just overall ease of access. Have we given them, our tenants, every avenue and medium possible to not only be able to get a hold of us in case they need to, but to be able to access their belongings as frequently as they need to? I know that obviously there can be some controversy in the industry as it regards to 24/7 access. There are some operators that love to be able to provide that. There are other operators that don't. We are not one of those operators that does. We have access hours. Nothing ever happens good in the nighttime. But, you know, it's just one of those things that we wanted to make sure that they had the ability to gain access to their stuff as easily and friendly as possible. So for us, OpenTech kind of made a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons that I named there. But being able to utilize the data and the insights that we glean from the amount of access that any given tenant has also been a tremendous help for us, specifically in my role, just kind of the patterns, right? The access patterns of a tenant. And so that we can then utilize that information in our marketing efforts to better hone in on who our audience is. So that's been kind of an overlying factor that I don't think was always taken into consideration in the industry. As you know, Lynn alluded to earlier, there's been a lot that's changed, but I think that as we've gotten some younger blood in the industry, we've seen technological advancements really, really quickly. And that has been nothing but beneficial to all of us.
I really like everything that Eric said, and I think it really speaks to really how you implement the new technology that's out there and continue to improve the overall customer experience. Not only the customer experience, but the staff experience as well. Like just for something, for example, and Eric's probably familiar with this, you get a customer who gate code's not working, right? And you're able to quickly respond to that person, get them in the gate if they can answer some questions where you say, oh yeah, I think I'm talking to the right person, right? To get it in there. And in respect to 24/7, it's interesting that Eric brought that up. And yeah, we've all heard that nothing good ever happens after midnight. But again, as operators, I think sometimes we got to think outside the box because that's been our mantra all along. But, you know, when you see that, you know, anywhere from 34 to almost 40% of our renters today are millennials and Gen Zs who tend to have third shift jobs or living in small residence. And this is typically or mostly in urban areas, New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia, those areas or areas like that. Then I think sometimes we have to embrace a 24/7 for those types of people. But that's, again, where technology comes into play, right? Whether that's through AI cameras or access. And we all know that they live in their phones. So it's important that they don't want to have to touch a keypad, right? They want to have visibility into their unit even when they're not there. So all good stuff.
Yeah, it goes directly in line with like kind of the a topic that we constantly talk about on the podcast and in our like state of the industry reports is like the modern consumer, right? Like it's kind of changed the way that I think operators that have been in the industry for a really long time, you know, how they offer that product to those consumers. I'm that consumer, right? Like I don't visit my unit prior to 8 p.m. almost any time that I go to it. And that's just because of my work schedule, going to the gym and all that kind of stuff. It's just when I and have the easiest access time to go there.
Have you seen a increase in visits from the younger generation or even just in general to the self-storage units? I mean, Lynn, you mentioned that 24-hour access is more common in urban areas or higher density areas. Are you guys looking at that data? Does that affect how, like what technology you provide and anything and everything like that?
Rudy, that's interesting that you said that because Mason and I just recently had a conversation at the SSA Spring Show that this is another piece that as operators that we generally don't really use the data that's available to us to understand use patterns of our customers, right? So all of our gate access softwares out there provide such incredible data, right? Whether you're in an urban area and trying to see how often or do you need to adjust access hours, right? Or in a tertiary market or North Dakota or South Dakota for Eric, you know, it's not just about identifying access hours based on frequency or times that people, but it's also like, who's that person who's utilizing that space more often than anybody else? And is that person probably less resistant to a rate increase? This is just a small example, right? But without identifying, getting that data, looking at it, and trying to understand all the data that's available in any of the access control platforms, I think we do ourselves a disservice, right, as operators.
Man, we're getting nerdy already, and I love it. Like, Lynn beat me to the punch of, like, even asking about the data. I'm going to throw it back to Eric really quick, because I'm curious, like, I think when we talk about data in the industry, a lot of that is, like, an abstract thing. Right. And Eric, with you guys having like a single vendor for gate codes, I'm curious, or for just all your access control in general, I'm curious, like, what does that data look like that you have access to, like, on a daily basis? And then are there other points to what, like, Lynn was talking about how you guys utilize that to make decisions?
Yeah. So obviously, we are able to get real time reports for any kind of entry and exit. So we get that data and notifications, like I said earlier, but then we can pull data for any given time frame to better understand the access patterns of any one person or a group of peoples. As far as I'm concerned, I find that valuable for a couple of different reasons. One, I think it does help us understand who our customer is, exactly like Lynn was saying. And you know, she mentioned 24/7 in the areas like the Chicago's and New York's and things like that, right? And so we are in a tertiary market, or the vast majority of them are. The closest we get to anything big is probably our locations that are outside of Minneapolis. But we do not see a massive uptick in entries in odd times of day. Honestly, that may be in part just because of where we're located. Maybe we've done a really good job of customer education. And so they just really understand that this is my availability, you know, from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. You know, it's worth noting, it's only a 7-hour window there. They can't get in. So it's not like it's super significant. But, you know, they know that they're going to gain access to their stuff at that time. To me, the second part, the thing that's most interesting, is we did see an uptick in access for all tenants through COVID. And I know I said the bad C word, but you know, we're only 3 or 4 years removed from this at that point, guys. Like, it hasn't been that long ago. And in fact, the industry as a whole, we're still seeing impacts from that time frame in a lot of the different metrics that we utilize on a daily basis. And so with seeing that uptick in access for all types of tenants, it was that, and alone, was interesting to me. But as our renters have become younger and younger, they access their belongings considerably more frequently, right? So we do have a fairly significant chunk of tenured individuals at our facilities. I mean, we have some that have been in our locations for 10 plus years, and they don't get into their belongings too terribly often. They might check it once a month, once every couple of months. But then we'll get new renters that, you know, they just rented last month or the month after, and they've already been in their unit a dozen times or more. So whether they're moving things in or moving things out, who knows? But I will say the one component here that we didn't talk about, which I think it's worth noting, is this is also where it really helps to have property managers that have relationships with their tenants, beyond just the I'm standing behind the counter and here in case there's a problem. I say that because you kind of alluded to it earlier, Mason, of being able to find out who's in a unit. Well, the person whose name's on the lease doesn't necessarily indicative of who's going to be accessing the belongings. So ensuring that we know who these people are, how they're related to, whether it's a loved one, a friend, you know, an acquaintance with the renter, so that we know that they are supposed to be there. So I really, you know, shout out to all of our property managers. They're really, really good about having relationships with a lot of their tenants. I mean, to the point where it's like they know things going on in our tenants' day-to-day lives, which I think is a valuable component to customer service. But I think that that's worth noting, is that's really helpful to allow your property managers to explore those relationships so that you really have a good grasp on who it is that's coming into your facilities.
That's an excellent point. I mean, that's the traditional self-storage, right? There's a relationship is built by the on-site team that's there. So what is a challenge for us in the industry is with the rapid expansion of remotely managed locations, us just trying to work on expense management, us trying to improve staff efficiencies in not just staff efficiencies, just because it's tougher to staff today with the right people in some markets, but staff efficiencies, and you alluded to it earlier, where your on-site staff is not doing the mundane tasks every day of locking, overlocking, sweep, identifying move-outs, those types of things. But remote managed locations are here, right? And the data, again, would let us know, do we have to open up an office, even if it's a manned office? Do we have to open it 6 or 7 hours, days a week? Do we have to be open 8 or 9 hours a week? That's what that data will help us with making decisions with respect to, you know, operating our properties even more efficiently. And for the remote managed locations, I mean, they're successful when they're done right, right? And so technology is king in really successfully managing those locations. And the other piece of that too is that technology, not only does it have to provide for contactless rentals or contactless access, but all the things that you implement for remote managed or lower office hours at any of our locations, the customer experience has to be almost, if not better than it is when you have a staffed or a manned office. And that's got to be the goal, right? You've got to be responsive. They got to know, you know, if anybody pulls up to a remote location or a location where the office hours, the office is closed during that moment of the day, you know, how do they rent? How do they make a payment? How do they talk to somebody? The signage has to be clear, right? It's got to be easy. A QR code where they can speak to somebody on a video chat. All of that stuff is super important. So as we talk about all these things, it really drives home the point that we have got to continue to adopt technologies that help us run our businesses more efficiently and most importantly, improve the customer experience.
You touched on this a little bit ago, or like at the very beginning of this, Lynn. I'm kind of curious, like, because you guys are third-party managers, so you see all these operators that are making decisions to adopt new technology. Do you guys consult on that side of things, like giving them advice? And then, you know, I'm curious just from an operator's perspective, like from a metrics or an anecdotal perspective, like how do you measure an ROI of adding a more advanced gating technology, or you know, how does that impact the bottom line from like a business perspective?
Well, there's two things, right? If you have to replace the gate, you have to replace the gate. Maybe it's just time to replace the gate, right? So let's replace a gate software that moves us into the future. You're going to do it anyway, right? Do you always have to replace that gate with the same gate? No. So there's the operational piece of that. But understanding the return on investment when you implement technology has got to be part of the conversation. And yes, we do consult. You know, when I think of, you know, well, let's put this in there, right? And then it has an app. We can charge for the app. We can charge for the monthly technology when you think of like Noki or Helox by PTI or Insomniac Smart Lock. All of those things people are willing to pay for. Anywhere from $4.95 to $9.95 a month. I mean, so not only do you give the customers what they want with this enhanced technology, but, you know, after the fact, the return on investment, eventually you pay for what you bought. And then on top of that, it continues to be ancillary income for the property. I mean, nobody's in this as a nonprofit, right? We have a responsibility to operate and increase the value of these self-storage properties. And we shouldn't be afraid or concerned. I've rented storage units at our competitors that are 100% remotely managed through Stories or Nokia or whatever. And it's not an option. You know, when you go to rent the unit, it's not an option. That technology fee just pops up there as a fee. Like, it's, you can't opt out of it. You can't any. And people do it, right? We have a location in North Carolina. Our average customer is 67 years old. And we have Nokia, Janice Nokia, throughout that whole property. And we charge $9.95 a month for the technology. And we have not once found a customer who didn't have a smartphone. Now think about that on an average median age of 67. You would think you'd have that one customer, right? Like, I don't have a smartphone. Zero. Right? And they love it. They think they're at this place that's just craziness, right? And it's not even in the villages in Florida. It's in Greenville, North Carolina. So we can do this, right? We can do this. And people love it. They absolutely love it. So,
and if they don't have a smartphone, they're not your ideal customer, right? For that location.
But with that said, you can still do it and that person gets a fob, right? I mean, there's ways to work around it. So just an example. And you think about that, $9.95 a month per customer in a 600 unit self-storage property. You quickly pay for the implementation and installation of that, that technology. And then eventually it just becomes ancillary income year after year after year.
I'm curious, I guess this is for like operators listening in to the episode, but what part of when you're thinking about budgeting, right? What part of an operator's budget should be geared towards upgrading, you know, access or security features and amenities? Like, is there even a number there to at least keep in mind, or is it really based on how much you want to upgrade your facility to be able to compete with, you know, the facility next door or user feedback? What does that look like?
So typically, no, right? Not from the technology standpoint, but I think most self-storage operators look at it from a larger CapEx type thing. So all of our stores have a five-year CapEx window, right? So what should we do here? What should we do here? What should we do here? For stores that are coming into our management, we're very transparent by saying, you know, within the first year, you have to update A, B, and C, right? If you want us to continue to manage the location. So we're helping the owners, you know, identify what they maybe don't know, right? Sometimes owner operators come to third-party management because they've been managing themselves for many, many years and just are ready to do something else, but don't want to sell the asset. But all they're used to is what they're used to, right? So we try to bring them up into the 22nd, 21st century, right? But sitting down with an owner or your investment group or whomever and say, you know, this is the plan. This is what we see for the next 5 years. On year one, we'd like to upgrade to AI-powered cameras, right? We need cameras anyway. It's the cameras we have are aged, analog. We really need to get rid of them. Let's do that. So really having a plan. I mean, obviously there are some situations where you just don't have a choice, right? You need to implement immediately, but having a plan to eventually bring things up to the level of technology that's available out there and the technology that will stand the test of time, right? Like, don't replace an analog with another analog. I mean, that makes absolutely no sense. So.
Yeah. Obviously on our end with being privately owned and everything like we are, I think for us, the first thing that we look at with any acquisition or new build is how do we get that property up to our minimum standard, right? Where it needs to at least be presentable and have the technology in place that we require all facilities to have. And so you come up with that figure, obviously, when you're in the build and or the acquisition, that's part of the purchase. And then beyond that, I think it's really important to listen to your property managers because they're the ones that are dealing with that technology every single day, right? And so what do they need to be able to be as effective at their job as possible? And then immediately behind that is going to be customer feedback on what they would like to see either improve, change, stay the same, whatever that looks like. You know, I mean, this whole conversation started with the ROI question. And I think that it's always difficult to establish an ROI as it relates to technology, specifically gate technology. But when we have gotten multiple reviews where they mention these features and amenities that they find to be, you know, likable, makes them feel comfortable, and it allows them to, like I said, gain access to their belongings quickly and easily. That right there, in my mind, there's an ROI in and of itself, because that speaks volumes that these customers are willing to go out and write a positive review and speak very, very nicely about what your facility has to offer. And then we'll even have some go as far as to say, I only rented with you because you had a gated facility and you had, you know, this, that, or the other. It was, you know, 24/7 surveillance, or it was the Bluetooth technology, or, you know, whatever that looks like. I think we do always have, sorry, bring that full circle. We do always have a budgetary number in mind for any given property through the course of a year. That budget will be all encompassing though, right? So it will not only be there for obviously any marketing strategies that we have in place, but it's also going to take in consideration any kind of improvements, any kind of capital improvements that may need to be made for any given location. I mean, even as far down as to, you know, lawn maintenance, pest control, things like that. So it's difficult to put a finite number specifically on a digital enhancement portion of any budget, just because if we haven't already figured it out by now, we are finally in an industry where the technology is changing rapidly, and we are finally starting to get the things that we need to serve our customers better. And we don't know what's going to be available next year. We don't know that there isn't going to be something that's just going to knock our socks off, and, you know, where we didn't want to make a $50,000 investment this year. Well, next year, we very easily could have $50,000 that we'd like to just go ahead and throw at any given location, because, hey, we know that this is going to be the differentiator between us and the competitor across the street.
Yeah, I love what you said about the customers and the reviews, and how you know whether or not, what, even though you might not have a return on investment, that you knew it was the right thing to do and to have. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, there's nothing more valuable than that word of mouth, right? I mean, I know, Lynn, we've had this conversation, and Eric, like, we talk about this every other week sometimes when we're touching bases, like, you know, that that review is gold, because we know that that's how customers shop, right? They go to Google, self-storage near me, look at the reviews first, and then start, you know, chatting or shopping on your website.
How things have changed in the 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Let's switch topics just a little bit. I'm curious to kind of, you know, day-to-day operations. Like, you have, we've talked about new technology. We've talked about, you know, the potential of purchasing technology or upgrading technology that return. I'm curious, like, Eric, you guys manage remotely or hub and spoke. Lynn, I'm sure some of your locations are doing things where you don't have a person on staff. Like, how do you guys think about, like, addressing issues like the maintenance and support of these systems once they're in place?
I think for us, it almost always boils down to the customer service aspect of a company and how readily available they are to be able to meet our needs. We are enormous proponents of partnering with, I almost feel like it's a dirty word nowadays, but vendors, right? I don't like to use the word vendors, just because I feel like, to me, the word vendor shows that I don't necessarily have a relationship with the people that we've decided to do business with. So I always say partners, and we service partners is another way that some people might say it. And so I look at our service partners and go, okay, so from a customer service perspective, and I mean, to your point, Mason, looking at the reviews of that company, asking our peers what their experience has been like with that company, and do they feel like their needs are being met? And then beyond that, it's going to be, if it is something that is serviceable by an individual, including one of our property managers, how easy is that to do? Is it something where if a gate gets stuck wide open, is it possible for them to go out and lower it themselves? Or do they have to always make a call into maintenance to have somebody come out and take a look at it? If a gate keypad goes down for some odd reason, do we still have the ability to manually access the facility so that our tenants can get in and out? So what kind of, I guess, fail safes, if you want to call it that, are in place by a company to ensure that we still can operate, you know, day-to-day business and ensure that everything is moving forward. But also, what is that company's trajectory, their growth plan? What is their idea of technological advancements for them as they move forward? Do they have, you know, have they found their niche and that's it? They're done. They don't want to do anything else? Or do they know that, yeah, we started as your gate access, but now we've developed products X, Y, and Z. You can take advantage of these things. You don't have to, but we're also still making enhancements to the base product that you purchased initially. So we're going to continue to be able to serve your needs to the best of our abilities and always be forward thinking and progressive in the way that we approach our product to ensure that you get what you need.
Yeah. So at SAM, you know, we have probably around 80, we call it virtually managed. The term in this industry is remotely managed, right? And then we have about 200 hub and spoke, very similar to what Eric does, and then the remainder are the traditional office on site manned locations. And what we've learned quickly, right, that those boots on the ground people are critical, right, especially for virtually managed or remotely managed and hub and spoke. I think all of us could make a very compelling argument that those locations, their curb appeal has to be superb in comparison to your on-site ones. I mean, they should all be high level, but those are really more important because even though there's not somebody there all the time, it's got to look like somebody's there all the time, right? With respect to curb appeal. So for us, we learned quickly that, and I think Eric had a good word to use there, fail safes. So our boots on the ground people, our SAM employees, and, you know, depending on the geography or distance between the locations, how many of, you know, we might have one who's a full-time employee who services five and might visit each one of those property two or three times a week. But then we have another one in Tennessee who services nine, but only needs to get there maybe once per week on each one of those locations. But we learned quickly that we have to have a backup plan. Right. Especially for our really remote locations. Like we have one in Hiawatha, Iowa. We have nothing else in Iowa. How do you manage that? Right. So not only do we have our own employee that's there, but if they go on vacation or get sick, you know, what do you do? Right. I mean, the property still has to be serviced. So we learned early to partner with organizations that we just went out there and just started cold calling across all of the markets that we're in and found, vendors, and sometimes they're general contractors. Sometimes that we, you know, spent a day just kind of teaching them about locks and unlocks, right, and sweeping out and cleaning a unit. So it's interesting how, you know, you got to put your thinking cap on and get the blinders off about how we typically do things in storage, right? Because there's a will, there's a way. So again, not just with technology, but, you know, even something as just some boots on the ground that helps you sweep out units and make them re-rentable, you don't necessarily just have to rely on that one employee, right? You got to have backup plans or fail safes, to Eric's point, because the last thing that you want is someone to show up at a property and it be a wreck, right? And like, wow, I'm not going to put my stuff in here.
That's awesome. I don't know, Rodolfo, where you want to go next after this?
Yeah, I would say one, I know I mentioned, and I know we're talking about access, but I think the podcast was really about access and security, yep. Right? So I think too, adopting technology, and I'll just give an example like AI powered cameras, it allows us to be less reactionary, right? As the AI cameras learn whatever property, we put them in all of our virtually or remote managed locations. And it has significantly gave us visibility into things. As the cameras learned things, the alerts, at first we were getting many alerts. Now it's down to just, you know, a couple alerts. Then customers aware that it's there. The dishonest people are aware that it's there. I mean, you think about the typically how we handle like a break-in, right? So you have the break-in, the on-site team identifies it the next morning. Everything's reactionary, not in the moment. So you think about security with respect to that, whether that's if you have a location that it's just getting bombarded. And many of us have those locations. We have over the last 2 years, units that are being broken into. And then they just get hit repeatedly and repeatedly. I had a Chuck from Devon was telling me that they got hammered at one location and put in monitored cameras. And, you know, it didn't eliminate it, but, you know, they were getting hammered like 50 units a night for night after night after night, put in monitored cameras. And he said the issue with that is then the thieves realize how much time they have before the police show up, right? But you still minimize it. But you put in an AI-powered camera system that sends out an alert, you can identify or send a notice to the police. Maybe they can get there before somebody else can. So I think about how we utilize that to manage our businesses, whether they're remotely managed, hub and spoke managed, or on-site managed. You know, how do we continue to utilize technology so our customers feel secure and their belongings are more secure?
And I think part of that conversation, Lynn, with Chuck from Devon was also around like the ability to do audio back and forth too, right? So like you're not only seeing it, yes, that your operations staff is getting that alert and, you know, maybe the police are being dialed, but like even remotely, you now have like bi-directional audio where through the camera right. system, you can be like, hey, I see you.
Yeah. Hey, guy in the black hoodie. We see you, we know, right? And then you think about all the things, like we had a location in Bowling Green, Kentucky, that, you know, we were just getting hammered by break-ins and we put in biometrics, right? Like you have the facial recognition at the keypad. And you know, it was expensive. Cool. I'm not going to say it wasn't, but yeah, it eliminated because you know, 70% of break-ins or if not more are for customers who are actually renting there. Right. They have access. Yeah. And so this company, you'd have to turn your whole face. And if we didn't have you on it, you just didn't, you can get entry. You just, he would just tell them, sorry, you'll have to get with the management tomorrow and figure out what the issue is if you are a true customer, but we don't have your face on file. So think about that as an operator. You know, would you rather deal with that and pay a little bit more money or continue to have to call customers the next day and let them know that their unit was broken into and some of their prized possessions are no longer in the unit?
Yeah, that's interesting. I see. I was just talking to an operator the other week. I think it was actually at the Vegas show, using similar to like the voice thing, a drone essentially to not only kind of record and whatnot, do surveillance, but also like have a light on it and whatnot at night. So that's interesting to start seeing kind of these new technologies out there. I was even just at Whole Foods this weekend where it freaked me out a little bit because they had their Amazon One, I believe it's called, where it reads like your veins with infrared. So you can pay instead of using your credit card or your phone.
Is it the, is it the veins or just like your hand? Or
your palm. But I was reading it further and I'm like
Amazon's getting blood samples as you're checking out at Whole Foods right now.
Oh, with infrared. But and so their goal is to not only have that and like for payment, but it's really more of like an identity technology for they're hoping to start adding this to other type of things like entering music or venues, right, for concerts and things like that. So it's interesting what's out there.
I'm excited to see the drones. I hope, you know, the technology gets better for the self-storage application and the cost comes down. But I mean, think about that, you know, somebody accesses the property at a certain time during the night and it just raises up and it kind of just follows the person, you know. I think that's where it's going and I can't wait for it. Like, I'm super excited about it. I mean, we're just using drones now for pictures.
Yep. I like, you know? I like to get my my waterfalls with this, you know, beautiful vista, you know. but I'm curious, like, so we've got drones. We've got gates, you know, with Bluetooth and smart technology in it. We talked about AI cameras or just camera systems in general. Like, what other parts of the access control security system, what are we missing?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're missing it, but I mean, I think one of the things too, definitely, again, people want to have visibility or be able to monitor the security of their own space, right? And there's applications out there that gets that done. I think a Storage Defender for one, where, you know, like, for example, Noki and those Bluetooth HASP type of technology, that if the door raises, right, they get the alert. Something like Storage Defender or any product like that, it doesn't matter which direction the intrusion is coming in. I mean, some of the newer ways for folks to be dishonest and steal is to enter one unit and then go through the wall and then go through the wall. And just this week, I was reading an incident report where a customer went to their unit, raised the unit door, and there was a guy sleeping in her recliner. And this is a true story.
Oh, my God.
In her recliner. And she had to unlock the door and raise the door. And there was this guy in just a pair of shorts sleeping in her recliner because he has a unit five doors down. And he went through each and every single one of those walls, unscrewed the walls, bent back the metal. And I apparently, when he got to her unit, that was the bedroom. And he was just sitting there. She immediately closed the door, put the lock back on it, went to the office. The manager came out with them and raised the door. He was gone. Right. And then you're like, well, how does that happen? And then they, you know, pulled some of her stuff away. And then they saw where he bent down the metal wall. So this really puts the monitoring or the alert, even though the store will get one, the customer gets it and says, hey, we identify motion in your unit. Is this you? Right, on their phone, and they can say yes or no. If they say no, the customer can immediately call the police themselves. And then, of course, the store is identified too. And this type of technology too, if you have it, let's say five doors in a row open. The technology says, the AI in it or says, well, this could potentially be a break-in. You know, how often do five doors in a row go up? So again, giving us, so we're not the next day reactive, we're in the moment reactive. I think that makes sense. So I see that type of technology getting better and better. I mean, one operator was telling me at some point that device that you put in there would have a camera in it and you would actually see the person who was accessing your unit. I mean, I can't wait till we get to that day. It's a shame that we have to, but we do.
That's super cool. I want to come back to you, Eric, for a second. And really bring it back to the customer. And then this is probably the last question before we set, go back to like, hey, how do we actually make a decision when a decision's being made? But from a marketing perspective, like you have all this cool stuff in place. Like how are you communicating this differentiator to customers, you know, on your website, vendor, you know, billboards, whatever that is? Like how are you communicating when you guys make that investment to put this technology in place? And then what's kind of that feedback? We've talked about customer reviews, but what's that feedback cycle like from a customer perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, website is going to be your front line of defense, right? I mean, when people are looking for a provider for storage needs, when they land on your website, you want to ensure that they are able to find any and all information about your facility, the features, amenities, security, like you said, those differentiators right then and there. But that in my mind, while it is still the first line of defense, it's kind of low hanging fruit. Nowadays, anyways, most people have a website and they've got that information on there. So it's like, okay, well, how do you really ensure that people are finding you for the right reasons? And this is where I'll geek out for a second because now you're talking my language. This is where, ensuring that you have search engine optimization programs, content programs, online directories programs. You've got these things in place to make sure that you are showing up for very specific keywords. So if somebody goes online and they search for secured storage near me, gated storage near me, you know, these are all kind of long-tailed keywords that somebody might look for. But the goal in the end, as far as Google's concerned, is it's going to all land on a list of self-storage companies. All right, well, now you've shown up there, but did you even make the list from the get-go? Because did you match one of those keywords that was being searched? Do you have those features? Do you have content that speaks to those features? So really making sure that you as an organization are the authority in Google's eyes as it relates to any one of those types of security features that you want to be known for. I think if that case study from 2023, which you know, that SSA did, which I feel like that's been my Bible for the last year at this point, but it gave us so much information that I think we all knew it, but we just couldn't really wrap our minds around it. And it really allowed it to be much more digestible. So to sit there and find out that millennials, who are of course becoming our primary renter in most cases around the country, to find out that pest control was an enormous deal to them, right? Which pest control for operators for years, it's just been something you do. It's not like you really put a ton of emphasis on it. You do it because you just don't want rodents or cockroaches or any number of, you know, varmin getting into your units, making a mess, you know. And then it you know, if you were really thinking about it, you took it one step further and you're like, well, I don't want to put mouse traps everywhere because I don't want a mouse to die right there. And then now we've got to deal with the stink. No, you want to make sure that it's not something where it's like poison, they're going to run off. I mean, like, you can go into that forever, but it's one of those things where we didn't know that that's what they were focused on. So that made us change our marketing strategy to ensure that we were then showing up for pest control related searches as it related to storage. We have a whole content page about it. We've added it as a feature or an amenity on each one of our location pages for every one of our facilities. And you can't just stop there, right? You don't look at just whatever the top search one is. You need to think about anything and everything that is going to separate you from the competition, and you need to be the one that's going to show up first. So making sure that you have a service partner or an in-house team that really understands your goals, and make sure that you guys are on the same page with how you want your voice to be heard and the narrative to be seen. Because what you don't want to do is show up for, you know, pest control storage for the wrong reasons, and then all of a sudden a review pops up and it's like, well, don't go here because they had mice everywhere. You know, like, you don't want that. So it's there is a strategy behind it. It's more than just typing in a keyword here or there, right? You've got to have more of a robust marketing plan than that. But that can be difficult. And I think that that's the one thing that we haven't really talked about through this whole conversation is, this all has to be scalable with the size of your business, right? I mean, you're talking to a 36 facility operator here and then almost 600 size facility. But there are so many things that while we may cross paths in the way that we operate our businesses, there's going to be a lot of other things that we're going to be slightly different because it's got to be scalable to the size that we are. And for all of the one and two operator shops that are out there, it's extremely important that you just vet every single company that you speak with to ensure that they are checking all the boxes for you and that you are ensuring that they're going to mesh well with any other vendors or service partners that you have in place, because that integration is key. They have to all be able to play nice and talk to each other. If they don't, it's going to make your life an absolute headache. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there because I think there's going to be some smaller operators that really are they struggle with who should I go with? How should I go with them? What makes sense for, you know, for this, that, or the other? And so just wanted to kind of say that.
Those are great points. I love hearing both y'all's perspectives, right? From ops and marketing, right? At the end of the day, everything kind of needs to work together and steer the ship in one direction. So these are awesome insights. So switching gears, and kind of like what you were just talking about, Eric, I'm curious, you know, what steps do you need to take to prepare your team, your facilities, right, for a transition or an upgrade of your access control system? That being, you know, working with a new service partner or just in general, you guys are updating things around, like, how do you prepare your team?
For us, it's all about communication and training, right? The last thing that we want to do is go ahead and install the system before our people don't have quite a bit of exposure to it, whether that's through a demo or going to a facility that already has that type of technology in it, because those are the folks that have to explain it to a customer, right? And get behind it, right? For an on-site manager, it's all in the presentation, right? Especially if if that technology is going to come with a new fee attached to it, right? They got to sell it. This is what our customers love best about this, right? Without having to mention the, you know, once you determine who your whose platform you're going to install, then it's all about understanding it and then making sure that your team understands it. And then also understanding and building in time for your people to use it in real time, stay close to it. Any hiccups you vet out, right? Which I think is key. So really it's just not about implementing it and expecting the vendor to answer your onsite team's questions or your team's questions. You have to be 100% involved in it. And the more pre-work that you can do, the more pre-training that you can do prior to the implementation of it makes the whole thing go smoother.
The only thing that I say I would add to that is, you know, more often than not, the nuts and bolts of a system are already going to be in place, right? Your low voltage lines are probably already going to be there. Your electrical strike latch for any kind of climate control access buildings or things of that nature. A lot of the times that stuff is going to be there. So updating the hardware side is not typically terribly difficult. It's just more of the investment piece. But like I said, the integration component, I think, is something that sometimes operators just don't think about, right? Like they see this new fandangled technology that they really want to jump on. Well, great. But has the new technology already gone out and spoke with all the other services that we utilize to ensure that they're all going to communicate properly? And this is a perfect example, honestly, is Swivel. You know, when we made a change recently in our FMS, we needed to ensure that not only was our FMS going to be communicating properly with OpenTech to get that gate code in the system, but then once it's there, is it going to communicate properly with Swivel to send out the move-in day text with the gate code? If somebody has an issue and needs their gate code, is it going to easily be able to communicate that because they have the appropriate level of access and integration to receive that kind of information? I think that that is all extremely key as it relates to an integration or selecting a service partner in general. And then as far as the training component goes, yeah, I mean, Lynn is 1,000% right. You have to train. And it's not just your property managers that need to be trained on this. If you have a call center, we have an in-house customer care team that we utilize. They as well need to be trained on it because if the property manager is not available and they're on the phone, they need to be able to answer those same questions as if they were at the property. So making sure that people are very much aware of any changes that are coming, especially as it relates to new partnerships, how it's going to impact their role or day-to-day operations, and then how can they ensure that they feel comfortable enough with that product to be able to convey it to a tenant in a way that makes sense.
Love it. Just to wrap up, any other advice or even things that we missed that you might want to convey to other operators thinking of transitioning or upgrading?
I did want to mention one other thing with respect to the customer experience. So we just partnered with Ingrained Maps, and I think I mentioned this to you, Mason, on all of our websites. So Ingrained Maps integrates with our management software. And what's cool about it is they build the map. We use SiteLink, and as everybody knows, you create your own SiteLink map, right? Same with StorEdge. But what's cool about Ingrained Maps is, so they create the map. It gets put on our website. It integrates with our management software. And so a customer can actually go to our website and choose the unit that they want to rent. And then after they complete the rental, they get a text with a link to it. If they hit the link, it GPSs them, just like Apple Maps or Google Maps, straight to their unit. Now, you think about that. For someone who rents before and after hours and doesn't have the manager there taking them to the unit and showing them the unit. And we've taken that one step further. So our AI cameras were able to put a link on that Ingrained map wherever we have a camera. Like if you pull up the Ingrained map, you'll see the little camera icons. And let's say for our call center, if somebody's trying to help a customer resolve something, the customer care center can click on the camera that's closest to their unit and get a visual as to what that customer might be dealing with or whatever. And it has proven like amazing to us, right? Like the customer care center, well, Ms. Smith, I can see you there. Yep. Just step on that bottom plate and that hasp will relieve itself and you'll be able to open the door, right? I mean, those are some of the key examples that we've had. And we find it super cost effective. But when you think about that for hub and spoke, Eric, or virtually remote managed locations, or before and after hours, or how your support people, your customer care centers, your call centers can assist customers and not have to reach out to anybody else, just fix it in the moment. And not only that, for somebody to say, wow, I mean, they were so responsive by me just calling and they were able to help me fix my problem immediately or take next steps if it needs to be escalated. I think it's something that we all should look into. I mean, super cost effective. And, we utilize value pricing. So that's helpful too, especially if they choose a unit that's closer to a access point. You know, we tend to, and without even trying, we probably rent 40% of our customers do an upgrade without any sales pitch we have good, better, best pricing and 40% choose better or best without us even having to say anything. So I wanted to share that for all the operators who might listen to this podcast.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Anything else, guys, that is burning to come out? If not, I think that's a wrap. So thank you again to both of you for being with us today, being our first true guest of the podcast. Really excited for this to be out there. Yeah. And I feel like I came up with a lot more questions in our notes now too. I think there might be a round two of this topic. There's a lot else to cover. So anyways, if you guys want to listen to more episodes at any point, feel free to look us up, Self Storage Lab, on our website, www.trisoul.com/podcasts. Until next time.